This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580 and online at will.illinois.edu. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. Their designs celebrate wilderness, agriculture, technology. They honor people and places. They offer us a glimpse of ourselves. Jim Knoll says they identify what we cherish and value. Well, who is Jim Knowles and what are we talking about? On the program today, we're going to talk about the stories behind the commemorative quarters issued by the U.S. Mint, the U.S. Mint's 50-state quarter program. Jim Knowles, he is the author of A Pocketful of History, 400 Years of America, One State Quarter at a Time, and he is our guest in this portion of the program. Listeners, I invite you to join our conversation this afternoon. I look forward to your questions and comments for our guest, Jim Knowles. You can join us with a telephone call. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area is 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. We also have a toll-free number. That number is 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Jim Knowles is an attorney in Birmingham, Alabama. He specializes in environmental law. A Pocketful of History is his seventh book. He's also written articles for publications, including the New York Times and Smithsonian Air and Space. A Pocketful of History, 400 Years of America, One State Quarter at a Time, is published by the DeCapo Press. And again, the phone numbers, if you'd like to talk with us, 333-9455. That's the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. And toll-free, 800-222-9455. Jim Knowles, good to talk with you. How are you?
Oh, very good, Celeste. Thank you for having me on the show.
Oh, my pleasure. What a fun topic this is. What got you started on this?
Well, I think it really boiled down to me looking at the very first quarter in the program. That was Delaware's quarter, which had a fellow named Caesar Rodney riding across the quarter on his horse. And I looked at the quarter and thought, who the heck is Caesar Rodney, and why would Delaware put him on their quarter? And from there, that just led into a line of inquiry that at the end of the day ended up with a book.
Yeah. Well, Caesar Rodney is an interesting character. And actually, I went to my pocket this morning, and I pulled out my quarters, and he was there. Caesar Rodney.
A pocket full of history right there,
right.
Celeste.
And Delaware was the first state in the Union and was the first coin to be issued in the series.
That's right. And not coincidentally, I think the program arose from a piece of legislation that was sponsored by Congressman Mike Castle from Delaware, so lots of Delaware connections there.
And not to be also forgotten about is that he wrote the foreword to your book.
Yeah, he was very gracious and volunteered to do that.
Yeah, Republican of Delaware, Mike Castle. Well, tell us about Caesar Rodney.
Caesar Rodney, well, he really was a great story and a great way to begin the book. Caesar Rodney was one of Delaware's delegates to the Second Continental Congress. That was the Congress that was having to vote on independence. And Delaware had sent three delegates to the Continental Congress in Philadelphia. Two of the three, to include Rodney, were in favor of independence. The third was opposed to independence. And so when Rodney was away from Philadelphia, helping to put down a loyalist uprising back in his home colony of Delaware, the Delaware delegation was locked and was not going to be able to vote, was deadlocked and was not going to be able to vote in favor of independence when the vote was coming up on July 2nd. That was a concern for Rodney's colleague Thomas McKean, so McKean sent an urgent message down to Delaware begging Rodney to get back to Philadelphia in time to vote for independence, and Rodney answered the call duty. Hopped on his horse late at night, rode 80 miles through driving rainstorms and thunderstorms, crossing swollen creeks, battled his way through the elements to make it to Philadelphia in time to stagger in and vote for independence. And that was a lot for Caesar Rodney. He suffered from a very serious facial cancer. He had severe asthma. He had a bad neurological disorder. And so there's certainly a fellow that put that answered the call of duty and it put a vote for liberty over his own health, as it were.
Yeah. Now, he's well known in Delaware, apparently, but I was completely unaware of his story.
Well, Celeste, likewise. And I was a history major, had no idea about Caesar Rodney, but it just occurred to me that there would be more interesting stories like that as the series progressed, and that caused me to begin to think that there might be a book in there somewhere.
Yeah. But isn't it also interesting to see what's missing in the history the quarters tell?
I thought it was. I mean, it was easy and sort of fun to sit back and begin to think what might appear on a particular state's quarter or what would be good to appear on a state's quarter or appropriate. And I was somewhat biased, being a person who's interested in history. I was sort of hoping for some great, you know, historical episodes and themes to be illustrated, and often that happened, but often that did not. Sometimes the states just chose to not necessarily celebrate a particular moment of their history, but rather use it as an opportunity to illustrate a particular item of pride or state culture.
Yeah. Were you surprised by some of the things that weren't selected to be on quarters?
You know, at the beginning of the book, I rattle off a number of great episodes in history that were overlooked. Maybe the one thing that sort of surprised or disappointed me in a way was that there was really nothing in there that commemorated World War II or a state's contribution to the Second World War. And maybe that was too big of a theme to capture on a quarter, but I know that some of the finalists, unsuccessful finalists for some of the designs, would have provided an opportunity to commemorate the Second World War. I think Colorado, for example, ended up with a design of a mountain, but one of the finalist designs would have honored the 10th Mountain Division, which trained in Colorado. Iowa ended up going with a Grant Wood design on its quarter, but one of the final designs that were not selected would have honored the famous Sullivan brothers from Iowa. So maybe that's an interesting question. That's in fact the first time I've been asked that question, but I think that's probably the best answer I can give.
Yeah, there's no Trail of Tears, as you say, no Selma March, no Battle of the Alamo. Texas is an interesting quarter, by the way.
Yes.
No Battle of Gettysburg. No Rough Riders in Cuba, no Doughboys, no Marines storming Iwo Jima, no helicopters over Vietnam, no Mississippi riverboats, Boeing 747s, or Apple computers. But, you know, it's got to be tough for people to come together and try to reach consensus on what should be the story they want to tell.
I think it's no doubt it's difficult, and in fact, we know your Illinois quarter, I think, is a good example of that. On that quarter, you rightfully and understandably celebrate Illinois' heritage as the land of Lincoln, but as you look at the quarter, you've also got off to one side the silhouette of a farmstead, off to the other side a silhouette of the Chicago skyline. So I think that when talking about a state, particularly a larger state like Illinois, or Texas or California, there are a lot of constituencies out there to honor and to represent, and sometimes you either have to pick a design and just go with it and recognize that you're going to leave some members of that constituency behind, or try to come up with some kind of unifying collection of symbols that hopefully covers all of the bases.
Yeah, I think the Illinois quarter is pretty successful, don't you?
You know, and Celeste, I would, even if I weren't talking to somebody from Illinois, I would agree with you on that. I think it does do a good job, and I think it's, you know, coming from my perspective of having to write a chapter about the quarter, this was one of my favorite chapters because I think the story of Abraham Lincoln in Illinois is just a great story that you know, a lot of people sort of think of Abraham Lincoln as really beginning and ending with the Civil War. At least, you know, casually they would think that, but he really had a fascinating and interesting time in Illinois as a young professional before he was elected to the presidency. And again, he came to Illinois when he was 21, so, you know, that's forgetting that he was born in Kentucky and actually grew up in Indiana.
Yeah, and what I understand about Lincoln when he got to Illinois was he had lots of rough edges. He was a backwoods guy.
Very much so, exactly. And, I mean, really read law, as they said, and very much a self-taught and a self-made man.
Yeah. Well, for our listeners who might not have an Illinois quarter in their pocket or can't recall what it looks like off the top of their head, we have the outline of the state of Illinois, And to one side we have Farmstead, right? And
that's right.
On the other side we have the Chicago skyline. In the middle, in that within that outline of the state of Illinois, Abraham Lincoln, looking like a backwoodsman, is stepping toward us, stepping right through the state.
And with his law books in hand,
yeah,
as he steps forward.
Yeah.
And Lincoln, you know, one of the interesting things about Lincoln is he actually appears twice in the 50-state quarters program, because he has his appearance in the Illinois quarter, and then also he appears in the South Dakota quarter as well with respect to his appearance on Mount Rushmore.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Well, is that, what does the South Dakota quarter look like?
The South Dakota quarter actually has Mount Rushmore,
uh-huh,
and then above Mount Rushmore it has the state bird, a type of pheasant flying. So, for example, in the same way in the Illinois quarter, I talk about the selection of the Illinois quarter, and then I use the Illinois quarter as an excuse to segue off into a discussion of Abraham Lincoln's time in Illinois. In the Dakota quarter, I talk about Mount Rushmore and the creation of and sculpting of Mount Rushmore.
Did you have some challenges in terms of how to write about the stories represented on the quarters?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because some states were kind enough to give me designs with great stories that were just readily apparent. Caesar Rodney, for example. Some other quarters. New Jersey with Washington crossing the Delaware, where there's a great story in and of itself. Massachusetts with the Concord Minuteman, the battles of Lexington and Concord. There's a great story. Utah with the Transcontinental Railroad, or Alabama and Helen Keller. Those are great ones. But it became a little bit more challenging for me when I had states that just really relied on a sort of an amalgamation of symbols. And in those cases, I really had to pick something interesting among the symbols and maybe take somewhat of a leap of faith and use that symbol as the excuse to really focus on something that may not be readily apparent as far as a topic of conversation or of writing.
Well, earlier you mentioned the Iowa quarter. What did you write about there?
Oh, yeah. Well, the Iowa quarter was a pretty interesting one. Iowa... On the Iowa quarter, you have a schoolhouse, and then off to the side of the schoolhouse is a woman and some children planting a tree. And that's actually based on, and it says Foundation in Education. But that design is actually based on a Grant Wood painting called Arbor Day. And Grant Wood was a famous artist from Iowa. In fact, he also probably is better known for his painting American Gothic. That's of course the painting with the farmer and his wife and the pitchfork. But Grant Wood was from Iowa, and in fact, the American Gothic painting was one of the designs that was also considered. But in the end, Iowa went with this particular design. I think both in order to honor Grant Wood, but also to honor this very proud heritage of public education in Iowa.
Is that the state's motto, Foundation in Education?
No, I don't. I don't believe it is. And
it would be appropriate, I think, if it was somehow or other. When I think of Iowa,
I think it's the Hawkeye State.
I do believe
that's the official motto.
Yeah, uh-huh.
I'm pretty sure it's not Foundation in Education.
Yeah.
I've become far more of an expert on various pieces of state trivia than I ever expected to, particularly as I started doing these interviews. But I'm not quite there yet.
Yeah. Well, speaking of Iowa's quarter, you mentioned a few minutes ago one of the designs that was passed up featured the Sullivan brothers, and you said they were famous, but you know what? I don't know who the Sullivan brothers are.
Oh, well, okay. Well, there you go, and which would have been another reason to have the Sullivan brothers on the quarter. The Sullivan brothers were from Waterloo, Iowa, and they all enlisted in the Navy at the outbreak of World War II, and they all ended up being assigned to the same cruiser, the USS Juno. and the Juno was sunk in the Solomon Islands, if memory serves, and all five brothers were lost at sea. So there was just this terrible disaster for the family, and it really became, at least during World War II, a symbol of the kind of sacrifices that families were making, the fact that there were five brothers all serving on this one cruiser, and all five lost their lives when the ship was sunk. And that was actually a little bit of a controversy in Iowa. There were certainly some people in Iowa that were very much in favor and supporting the concept of the Sullivan brothers being chosen. And so I think, if I've got my story right here, after Iowa opted for the foundation and education design as sort of a consolation prize, if you will, the state minted a commemorative coin honoring the Sullivan brothers as well.
Mm. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Our guest this afternoon, Jim Knowles. He's the author of A Pocket Full of History, 400 Years of America, One State Quarter at a Time. We're talking this afternoon about the stories behind the commemorative quarters issued by the U.S. Mint. My name is Celeste Quinn. Listeners, you can join us this afternoon with questions, comments. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455-333. WILL. Anywhere else, toll free, 800-222-9455. 800-222-WILL. What are a couple of pieces of state trivia that you turned up that you like having in your pocket now, so to speak?
Well, let's see. Alabama's quarter is interesting. Alabama's quarter features Helen Keller, who was from Tuscumbia, Alabama. And if you look closely on that quarter, you'll see that it has a little bit of Braille on it, and that the Braille actually spells out Helen Keller. But that's the first U.S. coin to actually have Braille on the quarter, so that's something sort of interesting about that quarter. Let's see, you look at Idaho's quarter. Idaho's quarter has an outline of the state and a profile of a peregrine falcon, and you might think that that must mean that Idaho's state bird is the peregrine falcon, but actually the Idaho state bird is a mountain bluebird, and the reason the falcon is portrayed on that quarter is because Boise, Idaho, is home to the International Center for Birds of Prey, and which has really taken a lead in reintroducing the once-threatened peregrine falcon back into the wild. I could go on and on, Celeste. Yeah. I'll keep on rattling this off. I bore my poor wife to death these days.
Well, let's talk about Alabama. Let's go back to Alabama because there's some controversy there, correct?
Well, I think there's certainly some irony. I don't know if it's really the level of controversy, but I do enjoy the elements of irony that pop up throughout this program, the series anyways. Yeah, I find it ironic, anyways, that we've got Helen Keller as the symbol of Alabama, and rightly so. I mean, a great Alabamian, a great American. I mean, a great international citizen for everything that she overcame. You know, she was deaf and blind and really unable to communicate until she was seven and benefited from the attention of Annie Sullivan, the so-called miracle worker, and from there went on to do just wonderful things. You know, she had graduated from Radcliffe, the sister college to Harvard, graduated magna cum laude, and while she was there, she wrote her book, The Story of My Life, which became a bestseller, went on to become just an incredible advocate and activist on a number of fronts. But what's sort of ironic about all this is people sort of know that that's her story up until that point, and she's respected and revered by so many people. But at the same time, she was what one biographer described as a rabid socialist. She was the advocate for a number of, I think, what today would be considered to be very unpopular causes. She was a outspoken supporter of the Soviet Union. She was a member of the Socialist Party. She supported Eugene Debs for president. She was a member of the International Workers of the World. And in fact, all of this was, based on all these activities, she was actually, to some extent, under FBI surveillance.
Yeah.
And the FBI maintained a file on her. I mean, so J. Edgar Hoover had a Helen Keller file.
I had no idea.
Yeah, and so that, I guess that's the irony of that, is that we're honoring or commemorating someone who actually warranted an FBI file.
Yeah, and you call that chapter The Other Helen Keller.
Yes.
And, you know, the thing is, and, you know, I'll defer to you, you are an Alabamian, but it would seem to me that that history, that the other Helen Keller, might have come up during the discussion of what to put on the quarter, did it?
Well, you know, I don't recall it necessarily coming up, and I think that was probably because, you know, even if that had come up, I mean, she accomplished so many great things, that was probably just another aspect of Helen Keller that certainly wouldn't have given anyone necessarily cause for pause. I mean, the quarter also says on it spirit of courage, and I think that's certainly what the governor, and it was funny because actually Governor Siegelman, Don Siegelman, chose the design, and by the time it came out, Governor Bob Riley was in office. But I think everyone was certainly focusing on Helen Keller as a example of the spirit of courage, as the coin says, rather than on some of her more questionable political activities.
Mm. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Our guest this afternoon, Jim Knowles, author of A Pocketful of History, 400 Years of America, One State Quarter at a Time. Listeners, if you'd like to join us this afternoon, give us a call, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. We also have a toll-free number, that number, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Well, let's take a call now from a listener in Champaign. Line one, hi.
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 Yeah, I just wanted to share my feelings about the coin from Alabama, you know. And I kind of liked it very much because I believe it represented the great minds from Alabama. So just wanted to share that feelings with you.
Oh,
well,
okay.
As a not-so-great mind from Alabama, I certainly appreciate that. Thank you, sir. Thank you.
Thanks for the call. Other comments, questions are invited for our guest, Jim Knowles, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Well, give us some background on the program. When was the program launched by the U.S. Mint? And can you give us some sense of the guidelines that they developed for the states and the process that was involved?
Yeah, sure. You know, really, the inspiration for the program came from Canada. In 1991, Canada was celebrating its 125th anniversary, and as part of that celebration, the Canadian Mint altered the design of Canada's quarters in a way where there's a series of quarters, each commemorating the different Canadian provinces. At the time, there were 12. Now there are 13, but you had these different quarter designs, again, each commemorating a Canadian province. And that was a very, very successful program in Canada. And basically, that inspired the American coin collecting community to lobby for a similar program here in the United States. And the coin community was able to get the ear of Mike Castle from Delaware, and he successfully sponsored legislation that directed the U.S. Mint to begin this series. Again, it started with Delaware in 1999, and then you would have five quarters a year being issued in the order that the states entered the Union, and it just continues to this day. I think last week, in fact, Arizona's quarter was finally issued. And that'll be followed by Alaska's, and then finally Hawaii's at the end of the year, and that will conclude the state quarters program. But there's somewhat of a footnote to that in the sense that this program has been such a success that additional legislation was enacted that is going to require the U.S. Mint to issue a quarter for the District of Columbia in 2009, so you have a Washington, D.C. quarter. And then that'll be followed in turn by five quarters honoring each of the territories. So the territories are going to get quarters just like the states got their quarters.
So Puerto Rico, Guam, American Samoa, help me out here.
No, you're doing good, Celeste. the U.S. Virgin Islands.
Okay.
And then the final one was the Northern Mariana Islands.
Okay. Now, one of the things you say about this particular program in an interview that I read was that there have been some complaints about this, a little controversy.
occasionally, and I think that's probably a, there has been, and that's probably a compliment to the program in general. It shows at least that people are paying attention. I think probably when I think of controversy with the program, I think of two incidents. Three, come to think of it. One had to do with Missouri's Quarter, and Missouri's Quarter depicts Lewis and Clark on the Mississippi River, returning from their expedition. And the design that was originally submitted, it envisioned that same concept, but the U.S. Mint had to revise that design for what they call coinability. In other words, change the design to make sure it fits onto a quarter, and the artist who submitted the design was not very happy with the way his design was altered, and understandably so. I mean, I've seen pictures of what he had submitted, and it was a very attractive design, but he took offense at that, so that was one, and has really complained quite a bit to the Mint about how he felt he and his design were treated. So that was one controversy arising out of Missouri. Another one came out of California. California actually had a popular vote to try to select the final design, and the designs that were up for consideration in California included a sunset beach scene. It included a image of the Hollywood sign. You also had a design of an 1849er gold miner, a prospector, and then you had a design of John Muir, the founder of the Sierra Club, gazing out over Yosemite Park with a California condor overhead. And in the online poll, it appeared that most people voting actually voted in favor of the 1849er miner. But Governor Schwarzenegger opted, and it was his decision, opted for the John Muir Sierra Club design, Yosemite design. And so that was an interesting situation in that it sort of pitted once again perhaps the mining community against the environmental community, and it all played out in the California State Quarter series.
And also going back to the Delaware Quarter, there was a little controversy there. Did you mention?
Yeah, that's right. In the sense of early on in the program, the Mint said that the quarter had been designed by Eddie Seeger, who was coincidentally a teacher, an art teacher at Caesar Rodney High School. And then subsequently, the story was that actually there were several people that had submitted a similar design, and that Eddie Seeger was not actually the designer. But in my book, I certainly interviewed Eddie and spoke with him, and as far as I'm concerned, I'm going to give Eddie credit. I found it interesting that the Mint went from saying that he was the designer to backing off and saying no, it was actually a consensus. I think maybe by that point the Mint was learning and was getting tired of dealing with artists. I don't know.
And I think, if I'm recalling correctly from this story, what Eddie Seeger did is he said, look, Caesar Rodney had this horrible cancer, and he wouldn't have wanted that portion of his face portrayed, or that side of him.
Yeah, that's right.
And so the horse is going, instead of, you know, going, we are such a left-to-right culture, the horse is going right to left.
Well, he would have wanted the horse going from right to left.
Right to left.
I'm sorry, from left to right. I think we messed this up in one of our earlier edits. The horse should have been going from left to right, so that he would have only been showing the right side of his face, the side of the face that did not have this terrible disfiguring cancer on
okay.
it. But at the end of the day, the quarter actually has poor Caesar riding from right to left with the left side depicted. And again, it was such a terrible cancer that he actually wore a big green scarf that would cover the side of his face. So you know, obviously a politician that would have only made it in the days before television.
Yeah. What a guy, though. I mean, he went on that a marvelous ride, and no doubt he was in, I don't know if he was in discomfort or not, but
I think he must have been. I mean, he was just in really in terrible physical shape. And, you know, some people say that because he had supported and voted for independence, that effectively foreclosed him from being able to journey back to London to get the kind of medical treatment for the cancer that he would have needed to survive. So, I mean, there are some that would say that this vote and this role that he took in the revolution may have cost him his life.
Yeah. We've had another call, and a listener wanted to know if there were other quarters like Iowa. And I believe the listener's question is in terms of being inspired by a painting. And I know there's at least one other.
Oh, you know, that's a terrific question. And actually, jump in, Celeste. Which one are you thinking of?
New Jersey.
That's right, New Jersey. New Jersey has the Washington crossing the Delaware. But, you know, there are other designs. Painting, I think that may have actually been the only painting that I can think of. But I know, for example, that on the, well, of course, New York's got the Statue of Liberty. Pennsylvania has Commonwealth on it, which is the statue that stands atop the Pennsylvania State House. Massachusetts has the Minuteman statue, which is there in Concord. But as far as, well, paintings, those may be the only two. Although, come to think of it, I will add that the quarter for North Carolina, which features the Wright brothers at Kitty Hawk, is actually taken from that famous painting of the that famous photograph of the Wright brothers taking off with one of the men standing in the foreground. So I guess I could think of at least, you're right, two paintings and one famous photograph.
Okay.
And several statues.
So that answers our question for our listener in Danville, Illinois, this afternoon. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Jim Knowles is our guest. He's the author of A Pocket Full of History, 400 Years of America, One State Quarter at a Time. My name is Celeste Quinn. Listeners, I invite you to join us this afternoon with your questions, comments, 333-9455, 800-222-9455. We've got a call coming in, so I'm going to ask you a quick question. And that is, you mentioned the success of this program in terms of getting our attention and doing a little education, I suppose, as well. But it's also been marvelously successful for the U.S. Mint.
Yes, Celeste, that's right. Because what happens is, and then obviously there's some overhead associated with the program and with changing the designs, but basically it costs the U.S. Mint 10 cents to mint an individual quarter. But what's happening is that people are collecting these quarters, an amazing number of people are collecting these quarters, and so they're taking these quarters out of circulation. So essentially, the government is making 15 cents on every quarter that it issues because the quarter's coming out of circulation. And by some numbers, or some figures, the U.S. Mint's made something like $6.5 billion on this program alone. So it's been a successful program from a coin collecting standpoint. It's been a successful program from an educating people standpoint, and it's been a successful program from a monetary standpoint.
Let's take another call now. A listener on line one in Savoy. Hi.
Hi. I've been collecting the quarters, and I think most of them have been quite good and quite interesting. There were a few I was disappointed in and didn't understand the choice, and I was wondering what your guest would say about the Wyoming quarter, which just had a cowboy on a bronco, as opposed to maybe the geysers of Yellowstone or the Tetons.
Yeah, that's...
That really surprised me.
Yes, ma'am. I know what you mean on that. And again, it just has the silhouette, has that sort of classic Wyoming silhouette of the cowboy on the bucking bronco. And then it says off to the side of it, the Equality State. I think, so. In fact, though, some of the other contenders were the bucking bronco with the Teton Range in the background.
Mm-hmm.
And
that would have been a little better.
Right. And then also the Yellowstone National Park with Old Faithful. So
yeah.
those were certainly considered, and
Do you know why? Do you have any ideas why they might have not chosen to do that?
You know, I'm sorry. I don't know why they would have opted for that. I do know that in that case, the governor had appointed a Wyoming the Wyoming Coinage Advisory Committee to submit the design. They collected something like 3,200 ideas for the design, and for whatever reason, at the end of the day, the committee opted for the, well, I'll just call the Bucking Bronco design.
Hmm. Well, it's been interesting collecting them to see what they come up with. Some have been great and some have been disappointing, but I love the Arkansas. I think that's one of my very favorite ones.
Oh, really? Well, you know, and that
I think
was
that's beautiful.
Yeah, you know, that's the one with the really the diamond is the center.
Yes, and the I think there's a duck or I don't have it right in front of me, but it's on a lake, and there, across the lake, there's a stand, I think, of pine trees. It's really just quite beautiful,
and
I think.
And the rice stalks along the side. Yeah, that one really came together well.
Yeah, it did. Well, okay, thank you very much.
You bet.
You're very welcome. And we've had another listener call in and was wondering about Idaho's motto here on the quarter, Idaho entering the Union in 1890, and it says, Esto Perpetua.
I'll defer to any Latin teachers that one. But I think that's exactly how I would have pronounced it.
Okay.
Which is always a dangerous thing when you've got somebody from Alabama trying to pronounce Latin phrases. It means, may it be forever.
Yeah.
And I have no idea why that is the state motto. You know, in that chapter, I really focused on the plight of the peregrine falcon and Idaho's role in successfully reintroducing and really saving the species. You know, at one point the peregrine falcon was endangered, and now it's off the end. It's one of the species that have been taken off of the endangered list. So it's really a great success story for both the Endangered Species Act and for the decision to ban DDT back in the 70s. Really helped save that species.
And I understand they're doing very well in the Windy City.
Yes, and isn't that funny that you've got? Heck, we've got a pair that nest in my office building here in Birmingham. It's just it's incredible the way they've managed to adapt, given half a chance.
Okay, another listener has called in and asking about the story behind the Oklahoma Quarter, bird and flowers.
Yeah, you know, Oklahoma was actually, there was a little bit of a controversy associated with Oklahoma. In Oklahoma's case, the state considered a number of final designs. One would have been the what you have on there is the state bird, which is the scissor-tailed flycatcher. The scissor-tailed flycatcher state bird, and it's flying over the state wildflower, which is the Indian blanket, and that was obviously one of the final designs. But other designs for Oklahoma would have been an oil derrick. Another one would have been a windmill. Another one was would have been a traditional Indian peace pipe, and then various depictions of this famous statue in Ponca City, Oklahoma, of a pioneer woman. And there was a little bit of a controversy because pioneer woman is carrying a book, and it's not, you know, even on the statue, it's not clear what the book is supposed to be, but everyone has always assumed it might have been a Bible. And in the designs that were being offered up for a vote, she did not have the book, so there was somewhat of a backlash about the decision not to have pioneer woman carrying a Bible. But at any rate, the images were put up for a vote, and nearly half of the people that voted ended up going with the flycatcher, the scissor-tailed flycatcher, and the Indian blanket flower design.
It's pretty.
Yeah, it really turned out nice. Of course, that's one of those darn chapters that that presents somewhat of a challenge for a guy like me, having to come up with 1,600 words on a bird and a flower.
Yeah.
But again, it's actually probably, this is a good example of how the book works sometimes, because I was forced to look at that and think, well, what can I talk about here? And I thought, well, Indian blanket, Oklahoma, Indian heritage, and I ended up writing about Oklahoma's fairly close brush with having two states come out of the Oklahoma Territory and not just one. There was some push for a separate Indian state called Sequoia, and that's really what that chapter focuses on, how close we came to having 51 rather than 50 states.
It's also interesting to note that it was fairly late to enter the Union.
Oh, yeah, yeah, 1907.
Yeah. Well, now let's take a call. I am so glad we have somebody calling in from this locale. On the toll-free line, someone's calling in from the Hoosier State, and this is one of my favorite chapters in the book. So let's talk about Indiana with a listener from Indiana. Line 4, hi. Line 4? Hold on. We're getting the... There we go. Line 4, Indiana, hi.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. I was wondering along the lines in terms of numismatics as whether or not any of the sets got out that were misprinted in some way or, you know, or stamped wrong or, you know, a double cast or anything like that, or whether or not they kept a tight lid on all that and everything is just normal, because there's so many sets they can't be going to be too expensive down the line to purchase. I was just wondering if there's anything that along the line.
Oh, that's...
Something like that. I mean, I know most of the stuff about the states, and I like the stories that you've been telling about how some of them chose what they chose to put on the coin. But I was just wondering from a coin collector standpoint if you can give us some information about this set, anything that might be, you know, helpful.
Sure, sure. And I'll jump in and say that I am not a coin collector. I really took the historic approach to this, but along the way, I certainly couldn't help but learn something about the coins. And two of the quarters come to mind with respect to your question of whether or not there were any significant errors that took place. Minnesota's quarter has a scene of a loon in the foreground, and then there's a lake and a couple of fellows fishing with a background of a sort of a wooded shoreline behind them. I understand that a minting error occurred on that coin that makes it look like there might be some extra trees added to the background. So that's certainly a quarter to look for, the Minnesota quarter. But probably the most dramatic error occurred with respect to the Wisconsin quarter. The Wisconsin quarter has a cow, and it has a round of cheese, and it has an ear of corn on it. And an error occurred at the Denver Mint during production where an error occurred and some 50,000 Wisconsin quarters were minted, and it looks as though those particular quarters have an extra leaf coming off of the ear of corn. So, I mean, it's only, you know, 50,000 out of something like half a billion, but if you've got one of those Wisconsin quarters, depending upon its condition, some people have said that, you know, those particular quarters can be worth $250, $300. And I say that very cautiously because I know that the values are always subject to one's relative opinion, but the Wisconsin quarter is probably your best bet as far as looking for an interesting quarter.
Okay. Now let's talk a little bit about Indiana. As I mentioned, I enjoyed reading that. When I read the chapter, it wasn't too much before the Indianapolis 500. And this is the only quarter featuring an automobile.
Yeah, and that sort of surprised, well, I mentioned in the chapter, that sort of surprised me. I was glad to see somebody just sort of stand up and say, by God, we're going to have a car on our quarter.
We're such car freaks.
Right. I think Michigan actually, perhaps understandably, considered having a Model T on their quarter, but right, Indiana with the IndyCar is the only state to actually have an automobile on it, and I used that as an excuse to segue off into a conversation about the Indy 500, and I really enjoyed this chapter, Celeste. It's enjoyed researching it and putting it together. There's some great stories behind the Indy 500. In fact, going back to the first race in 1911, where the fellow that won the race was doing something fairly revolutionary at the time. He was driving his car alone. He did not have a co-pilot. Instead of a co-pilot, he had this newfangled invention that he called a rear-view mirror.
Yeah, isn't that great?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's very interesting. Also, another piece of little trivia that now I'm carrying around in my pocket. Gas mileage from an Indy car that an Indy car gets about 2 miles to the gallon.
Yeah.
And one more thing before we go, I want to talk with you just briefly about back to Lincoln. Of course, he's on the penny, and now he's on the Illinois quarter, and a dollar coin is coming.
Yeah.
When is that set for?
Well, you know, that's an ongoing series, the presidential $1 coins, and at this point, I think we are at the presidents that have coins this year are Monroe and Adams and Jackson and Van Buren. And in fact, I think the John Quincy Adams quarter was just released. It looks like Abraham Lincoln's dollar coin is going to be coming out in 2010, at the end of 2010. But, yeah, so Lincoln's doing pretty good for himself.
Yeah, okay. It'll take us a while, though, to get to that 16th president.
Yes.
Well, there we'll have to leave it. We're out of time. Jim, it's been a pleasure talking with you this afternoon.
Oh, it's been a pleasure talking with you, Celeste. Thank you for having me
You're
on the show.
You're very welcome. Jim Knowles is the author of A Pocketful of History, 400 Years of America, One State Quarter at a Time, the publisher, DeCapo Press.